From Swarthmore College.
From Swarthmore College.
This is.
This is.
This is.
This is War News Radio.
If you've been paying attention to recent news headlines, you probably know about the Rohingya refugee crisis. The Myanmar military has been persecuting this religious and ethnic minority group, causing thousands of families to flee to Bangladesh and surrounding countries. You may be wondering, who are the Rohingya people and why are they being persecuted? Even though the crisis in Myanmar has only recently been in the limelight of mainstream media, violence incited against the Rohingya people has been going on for decades. This week on War News Radio, our reporters Serena Sung Clark and Shiloh Simonthirin dive into the history that led up to the current Rohingya refugee crisis.
Last month, October 25th, militants again launched attacks on police outposts, and the military response again has been brutal, and that's the current context for the 400,000 increasing numbers fleeing across the border into Bangladesh just in the last month.
I'm Serena Sung Clark.
And I'm Shiloh Simonthirin.
So today we're exploring the history of the Rohingya in order to try to understand the current conflict. Shiloh and I started our investigation by asking who exactly the Rohingya are. Their ethnic and religious identity is an essential puzzle piece to this story.
Their ethnicity and religious practice makes them a minority in the predominantly Buddhist Myanmar. Rohingya practice Islam. They're darker in skin tone than other Burmese people. They speak a language distinct from Burmese. These differences are central to the Burmese government's narrative about Rohingya people being illegal Bengali immigrants. When we turned to the experts, we found that the story isn't as simple as the government makes it out to be.
You know, there's evidence of Muslims living in Rakhine State since the 9th century. And we know that the Muslim population grew throughout the 15th, 16th, 17th centuries as well.
That was James Davies. He is a PhD candidate at the University of New South Wales in Australia, and he focuses on the Rohingya. He has lived and worked in Rakhine State, where the Rohingya population is concentrated.
Before 1784, there was the independent Aragonese kingdom, which was invaded by the Bamar, the Buddhist Burmese kingdom. And after that, pretty much the Burmese have dominated the Rakhine, demographically and culturally as well.
The Aragonese kingdom began in the early 1400s. At its peak, it encompassed the modern-day regions of eastern Bangladesh, Rakhine State, and southwestern Myanmar. The capital of the kingdom was described by a Portuguese friar once as a golden city. Poetry and local records describe shining pagodas and temples dotting the city.
So there is evidence of Muslims living in the Rakhine State as early as the 9th century. Also, Myanmar is a multicultural country with 135 official ethnic groups, but the Rohingya are excluded from this list. It seems to me that the Rohingya have been singled out by the Myanmar government. To find out why, we asked David Simon, director of the Genocide Studies Program at Yale University.
This is common colonial strategy, especially by the British, was to find the greatest enemy of the strongest actor and form an alliance with them. So in Burma, much as in various parts of, say, West Africa, the strongest opponent of the local state was a Muslim group that had, you know, arrived arguably later than the group claiming power.
Okay, so it sounds like the favor shown to the Rohingya under the British colonial government created tensions between them and the Buddhist majority. So what does that mean for Myanmar after colonial rule?
The Rohingya and many other minority groups had a small amount of sovereignty separate from Myanmar under the British. So when the colonial powers left and Myanmar became an independent nation in 1948, the Rohingya and other minorities fell under the central authority of the Burmese government. Asanullah, a professor of Southeast Asian migration and politics at the University of Brunei, told us that the first Prime Minister of Myanmar, U Nu, made a public speech calling for peace and unity amongst different ethnic groups.
He made a speech on 25th of September 1954. He clearly mentioned, these people are our people. It means these are Rohingya people are our people. This is still available everywhere. And then again on 3 and 4 November 1959, the Prime Minister and the Minister for Defense, Wu Baswe, at a public gathering in Butidong and Mongdao, said, "These people are our people. They have every right to stay here. They are our citizens."
However, as a Buddhist spiritual leader, U Nu designated Buddhism as the state religion. His government also struggled to bring an end to the ethnic violence and political rivalries at the time. In an attempt to establish order, U Nu allowed the Burmese military to take control of the government for over a year. Led by General Ne Win, the military government launched hundreds of operations targeting communist and ethnic insurgencies, resulting in thousands killed. The military instituted what was actually much desired political order. And so when U Nu eventually returned to office, General Ne Win staged a coup d'etat and formed a military dictatorship.
And so when the military took over the country in 1962, there was a military coup after about a decade of the parliamentary period. At that point, I suppose the military wanted to promote a form of nationalism which could serve as a cohesive force for the country, and they needed an internal other in order to define the community, to unite all the different diverse ethnic groups under the banner of Myanmar, of Burma. They needed an internal other, and that was deemed to be Muslims generally, but in particular it became the Rohingya.
So it seems like James is suggesting that the Burmese military strategically turned the country against the Rohingya to strengthen their government. They even revoked the Rohingya people's status as Burmese citizens in 1982.
Yeah, the Burmese military definitely made their position clear by revoking the Rohingya people's citizenship. But that's not the whole picture. The military began taking away the Rohingya's rights and freedom long before 1982. Ahsan tells us more.
Before 1982, they were still citizens, but their mobility was restricted. Their joys of marriages were restricted. You couldn't marry a Buddhist, but you can actually cross the ethnic border.
What initially seemed like relatively small limitations on various rights throughout the 1970s quickly led to increased violence and acts of discrimination, such as the Dragon King operation.
So 1978 was the military operation in Rakhine State, the Naga Min, so the Dragon King operation, which the military called a citizenship verification program, but basically involved brutality against the Rohingya villages, and 200,000 people at that time fled into Bangladesh.
The Dragon King operation was the first recorded case of ethnic cleansing incited by the Burmese government against the Rohingya. The true motivation for the Dragon King operation is still up for debate. For years, the Rohingya had been fighting for an independent Arakanese state, and the military likely wanted to silence any uprisings. However, the military justified the Dragon King operation by claiming that the Rohingya were illegal refugees that had come to Myanmar. To this day, the Myanmar government still maintains that the Rohingya are illegal Bengali immigrants.
This move to officially renounce the Rohingya's claim to citizenship was concluded with the 1982 Citizenship Act, which excluded the Rohingya from being considered citizens of Myanmar. James tells us more about the consequences of the Citizenship Act.
The 1982 Citizenship Law equates citizenship with ethnicity. The government at that time, the military dictatorship under General Ne Win, has a list of 135 different ethnic groups, of whom the Rohingya are not one. So the introduction of that law and this, the whole concept of the national races of the country, 135 national races, really grew at that time under Ne Win.
David, who studies instances of genocide, thinks that the revoking of citizenship was a vital event in the lead-up to the crisis we see today.
You know, citizenship gets defined and redefined all the time, especially in relatively young nations formally. In the area that I study, the Congolese, the Banyarwanda of Zaire, in the 1980s, that is Kinyarwanda speaking, had their citizenship stripped from them, their Zairean citizenship, Zaire being the country we now know as Congo. One effect of that was to inspire or strengthen the inspiration of Rwandan-speaking, Kinyarwandan-speaking Tutsi outside of Rwanda to develop a political project, a political aim to return to Rwanda which led to civil war in 1990 and ultimately a retaliatory genocide in 1994. So, you know, that's one of the reasons I associate the loss of citizenship with a heightened risk of genocide.
The Myanmar citizenship law was established 35 years ago, so why only now are the Rohingya being driven out of Rakhine?
Well, this is not a new situation. The world has a short-term memory when it comes to the Rohingya. 200,000 fled Rakhine in 1978, and another 200,000 fled in 1991 after yet another violent so-called citizenship verification program. Many of those who fled have tried to return to Myanmar, but the military strikes back over and over again. Every few years, when there's a sudden influx of refugees fleeing to Bangladesh, the Rohingya make the news for a few weeks, and then they go back to being forgotten. This most recent exodus of close to a million Rohingya refugees has gained more global attention because violence has escalated to unprecedented levels. The Burmese military crackdown this time was in response to an attack on police posts by a small Rohingya militia called ARSA. The Burmese government has now sworn retribution, and that is what has led to the mass killing and exodus of the Rohingya people.
So if there's evidence that the Burmese government has repeatedly directed violence against the Rohingya, why doesn't the international community do something?
Well, you see, when it comes to the international community, labels play a big role. David thinks that there is a case for the current crisis to be termed a genocide, which by definition is the intention to destroy a particular group of people through means such as deliberate killings or prevention of births. However, calling it a genocide would require the international community to take stronger actions.
And this is maybe a little bit on the edge of the interpretation of genocide law, but that the Rohingya are a group whose definition is both ethnic but rooted in a certain place, which is to say these are the Rohingya of Rakhine State in Myanmar or Burma. And the clear intent of those who are, or not all of those, but certainly some of those who are initiating the persecution is to get rid of them, to destroy them as a group.
This includes believing that being refugees in Bangladesh is essentially the destruction of the Rohingya.
Regardless of whether you think what is taking place is officially a genocide or not, by killing and making the land uninhabitable for the Rohingya, the Burmese state is giving them no choice but to flee. Close to a million have fled the country over the last few months, and they have been discriminated against, plundered, and killed for decades.
In that situation, you know, the United Nations is essentially mandated to act. Like, if that doctrine means anything, if it's more than just empty words that were thought of in the wake of Rwanda and Bosnia, then you know, this case where hundreds of thousands of people are fleeing the destruction of villages, the you know, brutal murders, and you know, including decapitation of civilians, that's where the world must step in to protect those civilians who are not being protected and indeed left vulnerable and even persecuted by the Myanmar government through its military.
This piece was produced by Shilo Sumanthiran, Serena Sun Clark, Leon Chen, and Catherine Kwok. War News Radio is a production of Swarthmore College. Visit us online to listen to archive shows, learn about our program, or subscribe to our podcasts. That's warnewsradio.org. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter to keep up between shows and let us know what you think. For More News Radio, I'm Catherine Kwok.